Thanks for joining me. I'm Bob Franklin. You're listening to the Radio Public Affairs program, Like It Is. Today we hear Frances Sanders and her attorney's version of the events leading to the tragic death of her son, Jonathan Sanders. In our interview today, Frances Sanders, Jonathan's mother, recalls the incidents of July 8th that occurred in Stonewall, Mississippi.
I'd say between 10:30 and 11 o'clock, I got a phone call saying that my son was involved in some type of altercation in Stonewall on the River Road, and for me to come that way. About 15 minutes later, I get another, 5 to 10 minutes later, I get another phone call saying he had been shot. So at this point, I get in my car and I go to Quitman. And at this point, there was so many polices, just peoples in general, just everywhere. And they had cautious tape, crime scene tape all over the parking lot. And they wasn't letting anyone in. So when I jumped out of my car, I went in. I went up under the tape, and they tells me that couldn't anyone go in. And I told them that I was his mom. So they told me they would let me in. So I goes in, and they sat me in this chair for about, 20 minutes. And they tells me that they was working on my son, and as soon as they got him stable, they would let me in to see him. Say 25 minutes later, this lady comes out. She tells me to come and walk with her. So we walked about, 50 feet, and we made a turn to the right. We walked another 50 feet. Basically, where we end up was another waiting room where there was a couch and drink machines and what have you. So I'm sitting in this place all by myself. This woman comes in, tell me that they were still working with him, and as soon as they got him stable, they will come back and get me, and I could go and see him. So the doctor comes in and tell me that they couldn't find a pulse or a heartbeat, and that he had expired. At this point, I'm still by myself, and they asked me that I wanted something to drink. They asked me, was there anyone out there that wanted to come back here? Did I want anybody to come back with me? And I told them, you know, I didn't even know who was out there, because when I got out of my car, I just started running. So they let my sister-in-law come in. At this point, me and her is in here together. And another nurse come in, tell me that the coroner was in with him. And as soon as they finished with them, they would let me in to see him. Okay. So another 15, 20 minutes passed by. The police come in and told me that Jonathan was gone. My son was gone, which I'm knowing he was gone because they just told me they couldn't find a pulse nor a heartbeat. So they told me that the state had came in and took his body away. And at this point, I'm already, it was just really rough. It was rough anyway. They took him away, and I didn't get the chance to see him until the funeral, okay? Now, it was told to me that this white police had choked him to get to death. He's supposed to have been exercising his horse, okay? He was getting ready to put his horse into the Neshoba County Fair. So every afternoon, this is what he did. He would take his horse out at around dusk when he started cooling off to exercise his horse. He had entered his horse into the Neshoba County Fair. So this particular night, he's supposed to have been exercising his horse, and at some point, he was attacked by the police, and he was choked to death for at least 20 minutes.
Attorney?
Yes. What happened on July 8th is that a father, a son, a brother, a person that the community of Stonewall loved was riding his horse, not registering any threat to anyone, not harming anyone, and he was brutally attacked. He was the victim of excessive force, and he was killed. He was killed by an officer who had no justification to even stop him, much less attack him. And so at this juncture, what we're looking for is, and what we're demanding, is justice for Jonathan Sanders. We have had several witnesses come forward with corroborating testimony and eyewitness accounts that state that Jonathan Sanders was not even aware that the officer was approaching from behind him at the time that he grabbed him from behind, taking him to the ground and placing him in a guillotine hold. Now, the time frame of how long the hold was registered it differs. It differs because at a time of such a hostile and scary moment for a witness, so that trying to perceive time lapses is a difficult thing. However, what we know is, looking at cases like Eric Garner in New York, we see that in less than 3 minutes, this gentleman was choked to death. So it's not something that takes a substantial amount of time. And so we do know that Jonathan Sanders was in a hold for a longer period of time than that of Eric Garner.
Let me ask either Ms. Sanders or you, Attorney Lumumba, what precipitated all of this?
Well, to some degree, trying to make sense of the senseless, right? But what we know is that Jonathan Sanders was riding on his horse on the main highway when he first came in proximity to Officer Harrington. At this time, Jonathan was talking to a friend on the road who had driven next to Jonathan and was just exchanging pleasantries from his car to Jonathan on his rickshaw, right? And at that time, Officer Harrington threw his lights on the white gentleman who he was talking to and pulled him over, and Jonathan kept along on his route. At that time, Officer Harrington, was grilling the gentleman about why he was talking to Jonathan, and, he just shared with him, we were just, having a casual conversation. It was nothing of any great significance. And so that white gentleman said at that time, Officer Harrington decided to leave him, who this gentleman has been very candid, said that he was drunk at the moment, meaning the white gentleman who Jonathan was talking to. He was drunk. He said that he had expired tag, and he said that he had tickets, tickets that were unpaid. And he said that officer was after Jonathan, that he was much more concerned with him and abandoned the stop to pursue Jonathan. And then we have other witness testimony that says that they saw Jonathan passing on his usual route. This was something that he commonly did, was ride his horse at night where the sun was down, and it was the best opportunity to exercise his horse. And everybody knew this. It was a usual sight to see Jonathan riding on his rickshaw. So this officer, like everyone else, would know where he was and where he was going. Another witness sees Jonathan riding his horse, passing on his route, and then shortly after that, they see Officer Harrington following behind him with his headlights off, right? And so he was stalking him. It was an intentional act, right? He had his sights set on it was intentional to follow him that night. He had his sights set on encountering Jonathan Sanders that night. And so it's trying to make sense out of the senseless. But what we do know is that you cannot speed on a horse. What we do know is that Jonathan Sanders had no ill intent or no harmful desire in his heart that night as he was exercising his horse. And he was unjustly approached and assassinated. He was killed by that officer.
I want to come back to some of your points that you've mentioned, Attorney. But I'd like to ask Ms. Sanders, for our audience, tell us about your son, Jonathan, and his hobbies, his passion. What was he like as a young man?
Jonathan, he loved
loved it. He loved it living, period. He loved it fishing. He loved it horses. He loved it dogs. He loved it any outside sports, anything pertaining to the outside life. That was his passion. He was a great father of two kids. He was a great son. He was a great brother. He was a great friend to the whole community. I mean, the whole entire community. If there was anything Jonathan could have done to help anybody in the community, it was done. He would give you the shirt off of his back. Just for an example, there was one time where I had a brother to die. He didn't have insurance. The desire that my son had for horses, he sold two of his horses and a trailer to come up with the money to bury my brother. Now, he really loved horses. Now, that's his, he loved, he's all out of all of the animals, he's a horse lover. But he was willing to do this to bury my brother. That's just the kind of heart he had.
That's a very poignant picture that you paint of your son. I'd also follow up with you, Ms. Sanders, and ask, what's the impact of the death on your son? How's it impacting you as a mom and the impact on his two children?
I mean, it's unexplainable. It really is. Because, you know, this is a son that I saw daily for 39 years. Okay? This is a son that, with me being disabled, this is a son that would come and cook for his mom, knock on my door with a big healthy plate that he done fixed. This is a son that on Mother's Day, any holiday, he knocking on my door with open arms, with a hug and a kiss, telling me happy Mother's Day, telling me happy Valentine's Day, telling me just a day period. He comes in, you know, he done cooked and bringing food, and it's devastating. Yeah, when I walk outside my door, I have to look at his home, at his house, you know, where I would normally sit on my porch and would conversate with him on a daily basis. Either he grooming his horses, whatever. And for the kids, there have been times that they would come and they were just with them coming into my house and sitting around playing. Okay, when my son come through the door, they going to jump up because they know that's their dad coming through the door, you know. So this has stopped. My grandkids, one night, she would go from one door to the other one, just looking out of the door, trying to see her dad. You know, she'll be two in November. She'll go from one door to the next, you know, because she see this house full of people, you know, and her dad should be somewhere. But she don't see her dad, you know. So they done took this away from these kids. They done took my son away from me. And I really can't explain it. I hadn't gathered all of my thoughts to what I actually am going through myself because it's just that bad. I can't sleep at night. I'm not eating. It's really bad. I can't really explain it. It's rough. This is a rough life for me at this time.
I'm so sorry for I'm Bob Franklin. The program you're listening to is Like It Is. On the phone with me is Frances Sanders and her family attorney Lumumba. They're speaking to me regarding an incident that occurred in Stonewall, Mississippi, July 8th, which resulted in the death of Ms. Sanders' son, Jonathan. To you, attorney Lumumba, police shooting and killing black unarmed men almost seem commonplace today. What are your thoughts on this tragic trend, and how do you plan to pursue justice for the Sanders family?
Well, you know, I've thought long and hard about this, Dr. Franklin. I'm not certain if we are seeing an increase in the trend, or whether our senses or our recognition of these circumstances are now heightened. In a new era, an era of social media, an era of, you know, being able to get stories throughout the world in an instant. And so I would you know, venture to say that the latter is the actual circumstances, that we've always had an issue of police brutality, which is now coming to the forefront, and we have to make certain that these things cease, right? We can no longer have mothers like Ms. Sanders pouring their hearts out over their children that meant something, just like children in any community, just like any mother who, whether it's a black life or a white life or a Hispanic life or, you know, so on and so forth, life matters. Life matters. And until we can ensure the safety of every community and every person, then no community or individual is safe, right? Until we can ensure that the law protects everyone in the same capacity, right? Then we can't proclaim to be a civilized society. We can't look to be ambassadors to the world if we can't get our own house clean, right? And so what we intend to do is we intend to pursue the prosecution of Officer Harrington. We intend to pressure that to come into fruition. And furthermore, we look to, you know, other potential recourse for the family in seeing that his life is not forgotten. And this circumstance is remembered in Stonewall, Mississippi, in Clark County, in the state of Mississippi, and throughout the country and the world.
Well, I want to pose this question to Ms. Sanders. Mississippi history is notorious for civil rights and human rights abuses and violations. We can point to the civil rights advocates, Schwerner, Goodman, and Cheney, who were killed in Philadelphia, Mississippi, the brutal murder of Emmett Till. People who've never been to Stonewall, Mississippi, Ms. Sanders, would you paint a picture? Tell us about your community there in Stonewall, Mississippi.
Okay. I remember my mama moved here when I was 2 years old. 2 years old. That was a while ago, okay? But I remember when we were growing up, they had like 3 restaurants here in Stonewall, and we weren't allowed to go inside the restaurants, like sit down like the white people. They had like areas where they would change your tires or change your oil in your car and all this. They had a place there, and they had a little window that connected inside to the restaurant, and that's where the black people had to order their food if they wanted anything to eat from these restaurants. We wasn't able to go inside and sit down like white people were. Okay, that maybe played out maybe in the 70s, I guess. And then the restaurants at this point is no longer standing, you know. They done been tore down or what have you. But for me, I don't even feel comfortable. And I haven't felt comfortable going into restaurants because there's always that, you know, that feeling that comes up inside of me, the way that we was treated back in the days. And just to look at some of the people in Stonewall, they would probably try to paint a picture that they're not racist, but they are. There are so much racism. That take place here in Stonewall. And not only my son was brutally murdered by the white police, there have been other deaths that has taken place in this county and been covered up.
Yeah.
So racism still exists.
And let me say this, Dr. Franklin, just to self-expand this point on that. First of all, the very beginning of that discussion of what the climate is in Stonewall, Mississippi, must start with the name itself. Named after Confederate General Thomas Stonewall Jackson, right? As a constant reminder and taunting to the community that lives there of the type of principle and history that they support and are revere, right? But it's also a town that, as Ms. Sanders goes diligently to the town hall every day of the week in order to demonstrate her persistence that she received justice for her son. But you have people who ride by with Confederate flags taunting Ms. Sanders and the people who join her. You have, you know, a town that many of the positions on Jonathan Sanders' killing are divided racially. You have a town where a number of individuals, black individuals, are harassed by the police daily. And you find poor white people who are harassed, which is resemblance of the country, right, of what we find in many communities throughout the country. But Mississippi presents a very special place, right? Mississippi is a place where racism and bigotry and hatred has been perfected, right? And it no longer becomes an exception to the rule, but the model, right? It becomes the model because Mississippi, where you have the highest concentration of blacks, right? The understanding in Mississippi is if black people can develop strategies by which they can become self-determined, by which they can have lives, which they control their own destiny, by which all of the forms of oppression are cast away, then it can become an example to the world, right? And so those oppressive forces, those institutions which look to be oppressive to people, have to up the ante and make sure that they exemplify their bigotry to a higher level so that it serves as a model to any place where our people exist, any place where black people or poor people or people who are oppressed and downtrodden exist. And so that's why Mississippi is not only important to the people in Stonewall and people throughout Mississippi, but throughout the country and the world.
My last question to you, Attorney Lumumba, why is it that you feel, well, I don't know if you feel this way, but much of the country may not have heard of the tragic incident involving Jonathan Sanders. Why do you think that's so?
Well, I think that there are, you know, many factors that may play a role in that. One being this media age, the life of a story is very short. And at the time that Jonathan was killed, you had other deaths that took place that kind of gravitated, such as the sister and Sandra Bland. But then also, you know, I think we're getting into a dangerous space where the stories that we seem to gravitate to are those which there are video images of the assault. And that's a dangerous space because if we only demand justice when there's video, right, then we open up ourselves to being more susceptible to harassment and murders and different levels, varying levels of abuse that go unchecked, that go unprotested unless there are videos, right? And so that's the less sexy part of the story for many people, in that this assault was not captured on video. But what you do have three witnesses or more who witness what took place, right? And if we were talking about Jonathan Sanders killing an officer, three witnesses would be sufficient for a prosecution. Three witnesses to an account which are all consistent, which are all independent, which the Mississippi Bureau of Investigation had the opportunity to hear all of their accounts, which I was present for, right, which all corroborated one another, and which these witnesses had no motivation to lie, right? That would be sufficient for a case to be prosecuted. But justice is being delayed. And the scripture tells us where justice is delayed, the hearts of men grow cold, right? And so we're demanding that justice take place right now. We're demanding that the city of Stonewall be held accountable for what took place to this woman. This woman who has been a faithful citizen of Stonewall, that justice for her son's death be granted immediately, post haste.
I want to thank Attorney Lumumba and Ms. Frances Sanders for being a guest today on Like It Is. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.